Kind of a Schultz tag team this morning. Yeah, I don't know about you, but I never used to be very interested in history, not particularly. But as I get older, I've become much more interested, particularly in my own family history. And some of you might find that too. I know that Meryl does a lot of family history research for her family. And you don't think about it when you're young, but when you're old, you wish your parents were around so you could ask them questions. You got so many questions. But they're not with us anymore. Researching family history is fascinating. Sometimes you find it's a bit like a puzzle and you're looking for clues. And sometimes you find things that are just amazing. Sometimes you find things that are shocking. Sometimes they're enlightening. Sometimes they help you to realize what made your grandparents what they were like, and then what made your parents what they were like, what gave them a certain character. And in turn, it comes down to they influence us, and our history helps make us the people we are today. You know, this is also true of our Christian heritage and our Christian family. Isaac Newton coined the phrase that we stand on the shoulders of giants, meaning that his discoveries came because other people made discoveries before him. But in the Christian family, we stand on the shoulders of giants as well, giants of faith who've gone before us. I've been doing some research about the history of this church, and it's really been fascinating and challenging. So let me just give you a brief history lesson this morning. You'll probably know that South Australia was proclaimed a colony on the 28th of January, 1836. We call that Proclamation Day, and we still have a holiday for it today. Well, 15 days after proclamation, a man by the name of Robert Norton arrived in the new colony. He worked to build the new town of Adelaide. He had a bullock team, and he sawed and carted timber to help build the new city. At that time, probably not much more than a town. In 1839, his timber cutting took him out of Adelaide and into the surrounding hills to an area that was known as the Tiers. Now, the Tiers in Australia, anyway, meant a forested area or a mountain range. And the Tiers is the area that we are sitting in right now. About the same time, he built a cabin for his family. Might have looked something like this. This is a picture from the 1840s, just a slab hut. Very simple. It did grow later as his family grew. And the place that he built that cabin is a place called Grassy Flat. Now, some of you may have heard that term before, some of you may not have. It's just down the hill from here. If you know where the war memorial is, where they have the Anzac service, you can go down a hill behind that. It's a very grassy area. Many years later, the locals agreed that Robert Norton was the very first settler in this area. There was a bit of discussion about the Suttons who built the Scenic Hotel, but eventually they voted and they said, no, Robert Norton was the first settler, so we're going to call it Norton's Summit. Also in 1840, a man arrived with his family by the name of Thomas Playford. Before he arrived, his sister was here, and he managed to buy three plots of land, three sections of land. One was in Mitcham, one was in Hindley Street, Adelaide, probably not the same Hindley Street we know today. I mean, same location, but, and one was in the Tiers. Thomas Playford was a pastor, and although, like many preachers of his time, he didn't have formal qualifications, he was known as the Reverend Thomas Playford. He lived at his Mitcham property, but traveled regularly to around the hills and to his property here. In 1842, he began to regularly lead worship and preach at Robert Norton's cabin, just down the hill there. This gathering was simply known as a group of Christians. It wasn't a part of a denomination. Thomas Playford was a popular preacher, and I'll just read you just a brief note here. They huddled together in front of a roaring fire in Robert Norton's log cabin at Grassy Flat to listen to the man whose sermons were reputed to be as remarkable as his magnificent physique. As families moved into the area, the meetings outgrew the Norton's cabin, and in 1851, a small chapel was built next to the Norton's property at Grassy Flat. Soon the chapel was doing double duty as Mrs. Norton began teaching school there. When the number of students outgrew the chapel, a school was built on the southern boundary of the Norton's property, which is approximately where the current primary school is. A bell had been used at the chapel, but it was given to the school, and that bell still exists at the school, and it says, presented by M. Pybus to the Reverend T. Playford's chapel in 1848, which confuses me because the chapel wasn't built till 1851, but he did have another chapel in Adelaide, so somehow it ended up here and then at the school. So you can go up there and have a look at it sometime. Don't tell anybody who wants brass, though. You don't want it to go missing. After Thomas Playford's death, another minister began regularly overseeing the Grassy Flat Chapel and the Second Christian Chapel in McGill. In 1876, these two chapels became linked with the Baptist denomination. Incidentally, the church in McGill that had close links with Norton Summit still exists, but in a new location, and it's called Ross Trevor Baptist Church. So we've had those links for many, many, many years. The chapel at Grassy Flat was used until 1882, when Robert Norton gave a block on the southeast corner of his property for the building of a church. And this Norton Summit Baptist Church, where we are right now, came to be. So, Aileen Norton, who passed away a couple of years ago, and her husband were the last Nortons to regularly worship here. Many years ago, I remember Don telling me about the Grassy Flat Chapel and how it had become a ruin. It's just broken down to a bunch of stones, basically. But he took me down there to have a look at it. And you can go down and have a look at it yourselves, and we might even organize something after church in a few weeks when it's a bit better weather. In fact, here's a stone from that first chapel, and we're going to pass that around. It's show and tell today. Oh, actually, you know what? I think I decided not to pass it around, but I'm going to put it outside. I want you to be listening to me, not staring at the stone. Yeah, but there's a picture of it. You can tell it's like a brick, so it's definitely been worked. So that chapel down there, that's now just rubble, has a little corner of it still standing, was built by faithful men and women who wanted to see the gospel spread across the hills. Some people even believe that this was the very first chapel or church in the hills. 40 years after worship began in the Norton's cabin, this church was built by the next generation of Christ followers. The cornerstone was placed on April 24th, 1882. Most of you would have seen that down near the steps there. And I've got something else to show you. A couple of years ago, in one of the file cabinets, we found this. This is the original trowel that was used to lay that stone we'll put this out on the table as well, and I encourage you to look at the back because it was used to lay the foundation stones of several churches after ours, but it came back here, which is really great. So praise and worship and proclaiming the gospel continued on here after that church was built for 112 years. And in 1994, the church expanded and this extension was built. A number of us were here when that was built, and that was a great celebration when we first worshiped in here. Now, as I prayed and asked God what to preach today, passages from Hebrews came to mind. And Rosie said last week how much she loved the book of Hebrews. And it's a book really worth studying. It's sometimes referred to as the fifth gospel because Christ is so central to it. And it was written to Jewish Christians who were wavering in their faith. And you might remember that Hebrews 11 is the great faith chapter. It lists the names and actions of the heroes of our faith, those who by faith accomplished mighty deeds and miracles. Some suffered greatly, even to death. Not all triumphed over their earthly circumstances, and yet they're all praised for their great faith. Abel, Noah, Abraham, Sarah, and many, many more are listed in that great chapter. So after Hebrews 11 commends all these heroes of faith, Hebrews 12 begins with these words. Therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. It's thought that the author of Hebrews was Paul. And you might remember many times in the New Testament, Paul compares our journey of faith to a race. He paints an image here of our lives being that race and being observed and cheered on by all these heroes of faith from the past. At least that's the way I picture it. I picture it like a great stadium and all this cloud of witnesses watching us run our races. And there's a roar and crowd of the crowds as they cheer on the athletes. Think of it, these heroes of faith are watching us. This image of a race represents the life of faith we've each been called to. For some, it might be an all-too-short race, a sprint. For others, it may be a very long race, a marathon. And some are called to run a race that includes a lot of hurdles and many struggles and much suffering. But no matter what kind of race it is or how long it is, we're admonished to keep looking to the finish line. That's where Jesus stands at the end. Look to the finish line, focusing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. Let's go through this verse again, but I'm going to go through it in a different version of the Bible called the Amplified Version, which I really like because it unpacks the meanings of some of these words. Therefore, since we're surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses who by faith have testified to the truth of God's absolute faithfulness, stripping off every unnecessary weight and the sin which so easily and cleverly entangles us, let us run with endurance and active persistence the race that's set before us, looking away from all that will distract us, and focusing our eyes on Jesus, who is the author and perfecter of faith, the first incentive of our belief, and the one who brings our faith to maturity. Some time ago, I studied this phrase, the author and perfecter of our faith. And I don't know about you, but every time I hear the word perfect to describe my faith journey, it makes me feel really uncomfortable because I think I'm never going to be perfect and I feel like a failure and, you know, be perfect as he's perfect and you know, the perfecter of our faith. But then when I looked more closely at the actual words, it made me realize, well, let's look at some of the different meanings for author. So I won't try to say the Greek word, but these are some of the words that are also used by that Greek word. So the one who's the initiator, the one who's the originator, the one who's the pioneer, the one who's the founder, the one who's the leader. So Jesus is the one who plants those seeds. And in fact, I don't know if you've heard this, but they say, they've done surveys, that it takes about 7 hearing of the gospel before people actually come to faith. So Jesus planted those seeds through the witness of others. So don't get discouraged there. So he's the beginning of our faith, the author, the initiator. But he's also the perfecter. So he's the one that, I like when it says he's the one who brings us to maturity. He doesn't expect us to be perfect, but he brings a maturity to our faith. He brings the process to completion. He's the one who finishes it. He fully equips. He's the one who forms. Jesus is the Alpha, the Omega, the beginning and the end. He's the one who initiates our faith and the one who brings it to maturity, to completion. And that, I don't know about you, but that really encourages me. I don't have to beat myself up if I'm not mature yet, because it's not my job, it's Jesus's job. So the responsibility is with Jesus. He plants and nurtures and causes our faith to grow. He continues to feed and bring us to maturity. And he brings our faith to completion. Oh, let's go back for a sec. So what's our responsibility? We do have some responsibility. Our responsibility is to throw off anything, any sin, any habit that weighs us down and holds us back from completing the race that's set before us. And to keep our eyes fixed on Jesus. Keep our eyes on that finish line. It's going to be hard, the race, but Jesus is at the end. Keep our eyes fixed on him. This doesn't mean that we don't do anything. We read and study God's word. We pray. We meet together. We share the gospel with others. We grow in Christian character. We become more like Jesus, but ultimately, it's Jesus is the one that brings our life and our faith to maturity, to completion. So, back to the metaphor of a race. I'm going to mix my metaphor a bit and say that after saying that we each run a different race, after saying that we each run our individual races, I want to say we're all part of a bigger race, a longer race, more like a relay. Now, in a relay, a baton is passed from one runner to the next, each completing a part of the race, until we reach the finish line. We each have a unique race to run when it comes to our own faith journey. But in the bigger picture of the Christian faith, over the centuries, we're only a small part. We're here today, the recipients of faith that's been passed down through the ages. Actually, I said first from Jesus to the disciples, but even before that, in the Old Testament, there was a great faith. They just didn't know the Messiah yet. But Jesus passed that faith on to the disciples, then to the early church. And then there was a lot in between to those faithful monks in the monasteries in Europe and to in Victorian times, the evangelists and the preachers, amazing. They passed faith on to those early pioneers that came here. And now through the generations on to us. The Playfords, the Nortons, the Bungies, the Suttons, the Merchants, the Golders, the Spargos, the Vinces, the Carters, and so many more. You may not all know these names, but they are all faithful believers who lived and served and worshiped in this church over the generations. And we're the beneficiaries of their service and faith. The organized church will always have its ups and downs. But Jesus, the initiator and completer of our faith, is also the initiator and completer of the worldwide church. We know that the church isn't a building. It's the people of God. And what we're experiencing here right now as church didn't begin with Robert Norton or Thomas Playford. Their faith and the faith of their contemporaries was passed down to them through generations of faithful Christians and all the way back to Jesus. And just as Jesus is the initiator and the one who completes our faith, he started the church, and it's his responsibility to bring the church to maturity and completion. Our responsibility is to run the race we've been given, be it a sprint, a marathon, or even if it's full of hurdles. We're only asked to turn away from the sin that weighs us down in that race and to keep running with perseverance and with our eyes fixed on him. Those of us that have been coming here for some time have seen our numbers go up and down. When I first started coming here about 30 years ago, we all fit in pews back there in the original church. Probably about, when I think back, probably only 40 or 50 people, really. Over the years, the numbers have increased and we built this extension. We continued to grow, and for a while, we even considered expanding even more. But things changed again and our numbers decreased. Maybe some of you are tempted to feel like we've dropped the ball, dropped the baton. But I don't think so. Our responsibility is to be faithful. Our responsibility is to share the hope that's with us, with our family, with our friends, with our acquaintances, our workmates. Those are our responsibilities, but it's the Spirit's responsibility to work change in people's hearts and draw people. We will never know the effect that our words and witness will have on those around us. When you get to heaven, you may find, and you may be very surprised, you may find that seeds of faith have been planted in the lives of those around you, and they were watered and reaped and harvested by others. You will never know the effect that your words and your witness have on those around you till you get to heaven. So numbers are not a measure of success in God's eyes, but rather changed hearts and changed minds, people following Jesus. And if the family of God is growing, regardless of whether it's here or somewhere else, that's a great thing, something worth celebrating. Nevertheless, I'm really excited to see what God's doing here right now. It was so encouraging to hear the outreach team speaking last week, to see new initiatives, to see some new faces. God's still working at Norton Summit, as we keep our eyes focused on Jesus. Now, drawing from what the outreach team shared last week, they talked about upreach, inreach, and outreach. I'm going to talk about looking back, looking down, and looking forward. So I'm talking about these in closing, so I'll be finishing soon. So I really want to encourage you to look back. Look to the people that shared faith with you. So parents, Sunday school teachers, friends and colleagues. It probably took quite a number of times of being shared about the gospel before you made a decision. And I want to encourage you, if those people are still alive, write them a note, give them a phone call. Just let them know that they were a part of starting something, planting seeds in your life. Because they may not know that. And if they're dead, if they've passed away already, maybe if you know their children, just tell them how much their parents meant to you. But we need to look down too. Look down to where we are right now. Oops, a little too far. Where we are right now. Who is ministering into your life right now? Who is helping you to grow in your faith? Could be pastors, small group leaders, friends, mentors. Don't forget to thank them for what they're doing. I know, it, like last week, Jesse mentioned something about a message that I gave ages ago. And I've almost forgotten that message, but that really encouraged me, that something that I shared a long time ago stuck with him. That's really encouraging. And lastly, let's look ahead. Who can you be passing that baton on to? Who can you be nurturing or encouraging? Just as we've received a spiritual legacy from those pioneers of faith that used to worship just down the hill, we have a responsibility to pass that baton on to the next generation. And I'm not putting it heavy on you, because we are doing this already. We are. We're just as those kids are back there in Sunday school, those seeds of faith are being planted in their lives right now, today. That's one thing we do. We also have the opportunity to share stories of faith with our grandchildren, with our nieces and nephews, with our friends and acquaintances, with our work colleagues. We proclaim Jesus at the Uraidla show. That's a way of looking ahead. Sorry, I forgot. Looking ahead to the next generation, of planting seeds. We love and serve our neighbors and our work colleagues. And we seek to witness to God's love wherever we go. Now, in my autumn years, I realize that I need to be writing down my experiences of faith. I might not have time to write a whole memoir of my life, but I can write down what drew me to Jesus, what things I saw, what miracles I saw God do in my life and other people's lives, what healing I received or I saw others receive, ways that I grew, ways that God used me in ways I never ever imagined he would use me, like standing up here. You never know what effect that will have on future generations. So I really encourage you each, start writing down those stories to pass down to your children and your children's children. You could be affecting the population in heaven by doing that. So, none of us were here when words of prayer, praise, and proclamation were first spoken in this location. And in another 100 years, we will all be gone. In the future, church might look quite different than it does right now, just as I can imagine those pioneers coming into church here and going, whoa, this isn't church, this is... Well, in 100 years, church might look very different from the way we do church right now, and that's okay. So things are very different than those first services down there at Grassy Flat 180 years ago. So let's run with perseverance the faith the race that was marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. And when that race is finished, we will be able to join that great crowd of witnesses that are watching and cheering on the believers in the generations to come. Max is going to share a prayer now.